This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, some brave souls take on the coldest night of the year. We have some spicy ideas for Valentine's Day. Tune in to hear about an international blues festival. We have front row seats in a police car when the heavy trucks are whizzing by. We'll get the straight and arrow about the traffic circles in the CVRM. A cardiologist tells us if you shovel like a man, you're doing it wrong. And a Glace Bay man says his son's heroism is being challenged by what he calls an idiot. These stories are coming up on the Coast. RCMP say it was a close call when one of their officers nearly got clipped by a passing driver during a traffic stop. Corporal Mandy Edwards says the driver was found and received a fine after this happened.
A Cumberland County District RCMP officer who was conducting a traffic stop on Highway 104 east of Exit 6 had a pretty serious encounter. Their police vehicle was stopped and had its emergency lights flashing, as is usually seen during a traffic stop. And an eastbound Isuzu commercial vehicle struck the police vehicle, sideswiping the driver's side and causing significant damage. And lucky in this case, no injuries were reported. So, you know, this is quite common when we see a police vehicle having someone pulled over on the roadway, whether it's a major highway or a local road or a street. There's a number of things we want to remind motorists that they need to do. So when an emergency vehicle is stopped on the side of a roadway and has its lights flashing, you must slow down to 60 kilometers an hour or drive at the speed limit if it is lower than 60 kilometers an hour. So on a road such as 100 series highway where there's two or more lanes, we in the same direction, the drivers must also move into that other lane farther away from the stopped vehicle if safe to do so.
Edwards says here's a front row seat to what it's like for a police officer during a traffic stop on a highway with heavy traffic, with some vehicles going over the 110 posted speed limit.
Well, every officer tends to do general duty at the beginning of their career. So yes, I have pulled over motorists, and yes, you know, when you're sitting on a highway, especially a 100 series highway, and those trucks and those vehicles are zooming past you, it does give you that feeling. It is nerve-wracking, especially even if you're just sitting in the car on a patrol vehicle sitting on the side of the highway, and those vehicles, your vehicle shakes, it vibrates, you know how fast they are going. So yes, it is quite a dangerous position to be in, but as well important to keep the roads and our public safe.
Edwards describes some of the ways police officers position themselves along the highways to stay out of harm's way.
Some have completely blocked off what I call the slow lane. So that's that inside lane, not the passing lane. So some officers use that technique where they will block that laneway and then give themselves a pocket that they can speak to the motorist that they've pulled over. And you might also see some police officers speaking to the driver through the passenger window. So this gives them another opportunity to be safe on the shoulder of the road as opposed to being out in traffic.
The fine for not adjusting when approaching a traffic stop starts around $300. Meanwhile, Cape Breton Regional Police are encouraging drivers to educate themselves about roundabouts. Constable Gary Fraser recently welcomed a group of about 30 people for an information session focused on roundabouts as well as winter driving safety. Fraser says traffic circles can be tricky, but some of the basic rules can help drivers ease into them. And if that's not enough, there's nothing wrong with doing a few test runs when there are fewer cars on the road.
Take your time getting in and out of a roundabout. Signal in, signal out, take your time, watch for signage, and just be slow and don't overtake anybody. Don't be powerful in there and get used to them. It's hard. Myself, I find it hard going in and out of them. So it just maybe in the evening, nighttime, when nobody's around, go out and practice going through them. That would help. Just so you feel, you know, how your car is going to operate in it, how it sways in it. That's probably a good tip there.
Fraser said to the audience that drivers simply must get used to them. He said there are several roundabouts in the CBRM. and there are more coming. He says the conversations he's been having reveal that drivers are basically split on what they prefer.
There's some people that really I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks about roundabouts, and they're for them, in favor of them. They said that they can get in and out easy and find it, the flow of traffic. And then you have the other side that said, you know, when they see that sign, they get sick to their stomach and they're scared to go through them. But that's part of the whole process. When you're going through, if you're upset and scared, you shouldn't tackle that on. And if you get into one and you get scared or upset, just slow down or even stop. Get your bearings and then proceed out.
It wasn't difficult to find someone at the information session who gives a thumbs up for the roundabouts.
I like them because they're quick. There's no stop signs, no red lights to pay attention to, and you don't have to wait for somebody else to pull out or who's pulling out. As long as people obey the sign and you reply to the yield sign. Like when I pull out, the next guy got to wait his turn. He don't pull out in front of me. But if everybody uses a roundabout properly, they are very good and they're very quick and efficient.
But if they're not properly used, he said, it's easy to get hot under the collar.
I had a person that actually, a guy went out ahead of me, and then the next line I came out, and the guy in the next trying to get on thought it was his turn. Well, it's not his turn. He's got to yield until I pass. And he gave me the finger because I was actually thinking I was taking his turn. But there's no such a thing. It's a yield, and he waits his turn and pulls out. But, I mean, people will learn eventually. And this was actually a young person. It wasn't an older person. And he should have known. But obviously he didn't.
And that's why this person said traffic circles are a problem. He said he'd like to see the red, amber, and green lights return.
Well, they should, the way I look at it, they should have them back the way it was. It's more simple for people. And I think with them, somebody's going to end up getting killed. Yeah, I've been with friends in Atlanta, they didn't even like them.
During the session at the Townhouse Collaborative Food Network in Glace Bay, Fraser also mentioned some tips for driving safely in the winter, proper snow tires, and an emergency kit for your vehicle were among the highlights. Souls Harbor Rescue Mission is once again hosting their Coldest Night of the Year fundraiser on February 28th. Dialogue's Cora Pergo speaks to organizer Alana McClellan.
Coldest Night of the Year, it's actually an international walk that takes place on the same day. So we would be focusing across Canada. So it's across Canada and close to home. And it is a fundraiser initiative for organizations that support people that are hungry, hurt, and homeless. And so the walk that's taking place this year on February 28th in Sydney at the Ashby Legion at 4 o'clock p.m. will be supporting Souls Harbor Rescue Mission.
What does the walk look like?
Yeah, so the walk will open at 4 o'clock for registration. And last year we had 100 to 200 walkers. People will gather, we will have a registration team, we will have music, we will gather together for some speeches and words of encouragement, and then we will depart together on the walk. We have McDonald Auto Group sponsoring as our major sponsor for the walk this year. We have Home Depot sponsoring the walk with the rest stop. We will have our Souls Harbor food truck, and we will walk 1 kilometer out. We will walk through Sydney, and we will end the walk at the food truck where there will be snacks and drinks provided, and then we will turn around and walk back to the Ashby Legion where we will have soup and sandwiches and tea and coffee and hot chocolate, and there'll be a kids' table. It is truly a family event where everyone of all ages is welcome. You can see children as young as toddlers to the elderly and everybody walking together. So it will be, it's a really fun walk. It's a wonderful time of community togetherness and celebration. And with the $51,000 that was fundraised from last year, we were able to pay off our mortgages for Souls Harbour in Sydney Mines and New Waterford, which is incredibly significant because now all of the money that is donated goes directly towards the cause.
How does it work as a fundraiser?
So Blue Sea Organization is who we work with, and they are the hosts for it. And so they are very well organized with all of the materials we need to help support us to host an excellent, orderly run event. And so last week we had a gathering here at Souls Harbour in Sydney Mines to share information about it. And what we do, we have team leaders. So we have approximately 20 teams signed up right now. Each team has a leader, and then they have a group of people on their team. And so sometimes teams get competitive. Some church youth groups have boys against girls, and they will do various kind of creative initiatives for the fundraising. And for the youth that fundraise $75, they will receive a Coldest Night of the Year toque, which is a really beautiful toque this year. It's bright blue and yellow, bright spring colors. And then for the adults who are able to fundraise $150, they receive the toque as well. And the Coldest Night of the Year toque is really iconic. Every year it changes, and so it's something people look forward to receiving every year. And usually people will wear their some type of Coldest Night of the Year garment or hat during the walk itself.
Where does the name Coldest Night of the Year come from?
Yeah, so when you recognize here within our community of Cape Breton, it's something that is visual before us. We see people that are living on the streets and suffering, and our conditions here in Canada are quite harsh. And we know that when we look at last year's statistics in comparison to this year's statistics, homelessness is actually increasing. The numbers of people that are living unsheltered are increasing here in our community. And so this fundraising initiative came out of a desire to support people that are experiencing homelessness, hurt, hunger, and so it's various not-for-profit organizations that are supported on this one day. We know February is generally known as our coldest night in Canada, and so the last Saturday in February is the date that's chosen, and across our entire country, from east to west, we are one of the most easterly walks that take place in Canada for Coldest Night of the Year. And all at the same time, we'll be walking together. So there is an option for a 2 kilometer walk or a 5 kilometer walk. Generally, our group, we encourage the 2 kilometer walk. We do have a number of volunteers at every single crosswalk for the event. And It's nice when we can all do the entire walk together. But if people have it upon their heart, pressed upon their heart, that they would like to do the 5 kilometer walk, then that's something that we can accommodate during the event as well.
Where last year the money you said went to mortgages. What are you hoping to use the money for this year?
Yeah, so we here at Souls Harbour in Sydney Mines and New Waterford, a meal cost approximately $4.85 per meal. And we are in February reopening Hope House. So it's a women's recovery center for addictions. And that is not something that is government funded. And so we are a non-for-profit organization. And so it is something that we are hoping to really be able to help be accessible for all women. So the money that is fundraised from this year's Coldest Night of the Year walk will go towards funding meals for our guests in New Waterford, for our guests in Sydney Mines, and yet also for the women that are in need of recovery at Hope House.
How many years have you been doing Coldest Night of the Year?
So this will be our 4th year doing it here in Cape Breton through the Ashby Legion. They've been amazing to support us. It's a beautiful space for the event to take place in on the upper level. And Cape Bretoners have been incredibly generous in their donations. This is our biggest fundraising event of the entire year. So we are so grateful to everyone and their support. And we really look forward. We really look forward to February 28th and walking together again.
How have you seen it grow?
Yeah, I think that as we have built relationships with the community and built trust within the community, our volunteers are incredible. We have the most amazing volunteers in both Sydney Mines and New Waterford. And so we're really seeing through the volunteers a lot of growth. We're seeing through churches and businesses within the community. As we develop those relationships within the community, people just naturally are giving and inclined to support the growth of it. And so we see that overflow taking place into coldest night of the year as well. And everybody wanting to offer their gifts and service. So for people that aren't able to walk, we have lots of volunteer roles as well. Anything from decorating to food service to administration with registration for check-in, music, the kids' table, hot chocolate. We have outdoor roles with at the crosswalks and in the parking lot and the food truck at our turnaround point. So there's always ways in which someone is able to give and participate, even if they may not be able to do the outdoor portion of the walk. So I would certainly want everyone to know that they're welcome, even if they're not able to participate in the actual 2 kilometer walk itself.
How can people find out more information, volunteer, donate?
So if anyone were to simply search up coldest night of the year, Cape Breton, that will take you to our location in Sydney. We would be, you know, the only organization doing the walk in Sydney, in Cape Breton, and that will bring them directly to our page. And people are able to simply like click on that link and go online and they can register a team, or they're welcome to simply join a team that's already been formed. My name is Alana McClellan, and you'll see me leading a team in Sydney Mines, and certainly everyone is welcome to join that team. They don't have to feel, you know, pressured to create their own team if that's something that they'd rather join a team instead. So that it's taking place the last Saturday in February, the coldest night of the year walk to support Souls Harbor Rescue Mission on Saturday, February 28th. We will be meeting at 4 o'clock p.m. at the Ashby Legion in Sydney, and the event will wrap up at 7 o'clock p.m. So somewhere around 4:30 is when we will depart to do the actual walk itself. We will do the 1 kilometer walk out, 1 kilometer walk back, and then we will enjoy soup and sandwiches and a meal and dessert together. And we will have music and speeches, and there'll be a kids table and a hot chocolate stand for the children. And it will be a time of fun and community gathering, and everybody is welcome.
A cardiologist working out of the regional hospital says shoveling snow, even light snow, can be a deadly activity. Dr. Paul McDonald says emergency rooms receive more heart attack victims during the snowstorms, but some simple advice can prevent this from happening.
Well, snow shoveling is a high-risk activity. So if you are young and healthy and your neighbor's going to give you a few bucks to shovel the yard, then you have no concerns and go ahead. But if you're in an age group where you could have heart disease, or even more so if you already are known to have heart disease, then this is a higher risk activity even with light snow. You use muscles bending and lifting that you don't normally use. The cold weather increases some stress on your heart. Your heart rate and blood pressure will increase surprisingly fast. And there's been very good research done with snowstorms and increased heart attacks. So we don't want to see you in our emergency room today. I would definitely take it easy if you have heart risk and concern.
McDonald says there is a certain group likely to overdo it. He says, don't be like that.
The keys with this as well is you need to listen to your body. So if you're getting
very tired or short of breath, if you're having chest pain, you need to stop and rest. I tell people don't shovel like a man. And when men shovel, we even if we feel really bad, I'm not finished yet, so I'm going to push on. And if you have higher risk, you need to avoid that. So it's never that important to get to work 10 or 15 minutes earlier or an hour earlier versus these conditions. So I think being careful is the most important thing.
Symptoms that signal a heart attack include discomfort in the chest, neck, and jaws. Others include tingling or numbness, and even sweating when shoveling snow can be a sign of a heart attack on the way. This week on The Good Sentence, Paul McDougall talks to Joanne Rolls and Kathy McDougall, organizers of the upcoming Cape Breton Island International Blues Festival.
We'll start off with asking Kathy, just tell us a little bit about the festival and why it's important that you people are doing this.
Okay, well, the festival is important for a lot of different reasons. I think it will highlight the blues genre of music here in Cape Breton. We did have two kickoff concerts, I guess, one in August and one in November, and both of them were very successful, and there appears to be quite an interest in blues music, both from the audience point of view and from the performer point of view. So we decided to have it in February because it's kind of a down time in the service industry here and the economy and whatnot. So we just decided to have it in February for that reason. And, yeah.
So you've got two nights of acts, right?
Yes, we have Friday night is from 6 till 10 at the Capri, and Saturday night is the same time. 6 to 10. We have two acts on Friday night and three on Saturday. And then we have Daniel's Ale House has graciously offered to host the After Hours Club from 10 until whenever. And we do have a host band there, and we're hoping. There are going to be some special guests that are not going to be announced right now, but we are hoping that people will think about coming up and jamming or contacting the coordinator of that, Joey McLeod, to get on the stage and perform.
That'll be Joe McLeod and Tracy McKinnon, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And who knows, maybe some of the guests from the Capri could end up down there.
Exactly.
They still have the energy.
Yes, that's exactly what we're hoping.
And maybe the audience does too. So, Joanne, what does just like the blues music mean to you?
Oh, I love the blues. I love the blues, and there's lots of blues players. I know that there's a jam every Wednesday night downtown, and we're seeing more and more blues things happening around town. So, and because, like I say, I'm a musician, I've been singing some blues, you know, forever. And the Capri is just this beautiful venue. And as we all know, back in the day, in my vintage years.
Yeah, my vintage too.
Yeah, it was quite a happening spot. And it's turned into a late night cabaret for a younger crowd who like to come and dance. And that is so wonderful for them to have. Mm-hmm. But it's time for us, older people, to have a place to come and listen to music, And so what we try to do is to have people out age who want to come in a little earlier. We do like 4 to 10, around that time slot. because people are older, you know, they're going to have their grandchildren on Sunday morning, you know, to look after, and they want to come out and have some fun too and do some dancing, that sort of thing. Or, you know, just come hear some live music where they want to sit and listen, you know, to, you know, solo or duo performers. Yeah. So that's what we're into at the Capri at this stage.
This is not unlike actually what the Midtown Tavern did in Halifax a number of years ago. The Midtown moved, and the only way to kind of make it survive was in the evening. It actually is a different bar. It's a dance bar later in the evening.
Right.
But all day long up till 6 or 7, it's the Midtown.
Yes.
So it's like you got two kind of different things happening in the same place.
Yes, and it's a wonderful, and it can work. You know,
it's kind
of fun that, you know, the kids and their grandparents can be going to the same venue.
Yeah, but the paths will never cross.
And their paths shall not cross.
Yeah.
Although you'd be surprised, sometimes older people go to the Capri at night, too.
Yeah, there you go. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story.
So it was very interesting, because when we did the last two kickoff concerts, particularly the last one in November, almost every person that came in the door said, "Oh my God, it's got to be 100 years since I was in here." Right? And so I think they really appreciate it coming to that bar, because it's a lovely bar. It truly is. And it's got lots of space. So we're hoping to get more acts in there during the day.
Yeah, it's a warm room.
Yeah, well, I was one of those people that said that. And that was the Joe Murphy and Water Street Blues.
That's right.
Yeah, very successful day.
Hugely successful day, considering there was a water main break all day long.
Oh, that's right. And are we going to open, or are we not going to open? Are we going to open, or are we not going to open?
It was only delayed an hour.
It's a great show.
I saw Joe Murphy this weekend at Colleen's Pub in Dartmouth. And he hollered across the crowd and said, "Hey, Kathy, how's the water going? How's the water work?" So he remembers that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he'd love to come back.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. So there's many acts. I'd like to just talk about, get you to tell us some of them. So it's being pitched as an international blues festival, which it certainly is when you have someone from Louisiana, a blues rocker, playing at this. So tell us about Gemini Dragon, and then, Kathy, tell us how you got someone of Gemini Dragon's stature to come here.
Well, that was simple, because as soon as we put up our Facebook page, the Cape Breton Island International Blues Festival, that was way back in June, I believe, or May, I was actually contacted by Gemini's partner, who she also plays with in her band, and they showed an interest in coming. So, you know, there's been lots of contact with them since then, and as recently as last week, and they're all set and ready to come. I think now they're on a bit of a tour. They do have a stopover in Massachusetts, and it's for a huge wedding that they're playing at, and then they're coming on to Cape Breton, and they're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You want to describe their music a bit?
Well, I think they're more of the Louisiana style of blues. Would you say Cajun, Joanne? Or?
Maybe.
A little bit of Cajun, but it's more of the soul kind of old-time kind of blues music is what I like to term it as.
Yeah, and the two vocalists, of her, of course, being the lead, and then there's three or four members in the band. This is going to be a big show.
Yes, it is, and I just hope that people are open to coming to see someone that they're not familiar with, because I think that's what makes the festival really happen, is when you have some familiar acts, and then you don't. You have some acts that are not so familiar, and I just hope people will come and see her, or at least listen to her on Facebook.
Oh, and she's multi-album, singles, radio play, everything. Like, Gemini is a big act in the U.S.
Yes,
and other international audiences. So that's on the Friday, the 13th.
Yeah.
So that show is from 6 to 10, and the group on before is Dan Dorian. Joanne, why don't you tell us about Dan?
I'm not really familiar with Dan, to be honest.
I met Dan a few years back. I think he may have been at the ECMA Awards probably about 5, 6, 7 years ago, whenever they were here.
He's a Cape Bretoner, right?
Well,
a local
he
or
has
Maritimer?
Some, yes, he has some roots in Port Hood, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember seeing him at the Steel City, and he just blew me away. So I contacted him, and he was more than happy to come to this festival, mainly because he loves to play blues, and he has connections here. So, yeah, we're very lucky to have him.
Yeah.
We have to credit Kathy with finding the entertainment.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
Yeah. No, you did this.
Well, you can't put on a whole weekend like this without finding the acts.
That's right.
So that's Friday. And then Saturday is three acts. You got the Midtown Blues Band.
Mm-hmm.
Campbell and Johnson, a male and female duet set, and John Hines, who recently basically blew the walls out of Breton Brewing there a couple of weeks ago with that power blues band he has. Now, for any of our Coast listeners that don't know John Hines, tell us a little bit about him.
Well, John Hines is from the community of Judick. He came to the highlight, I guess, of the music scene when he was chosen to, well, he won second on the Memphis Challenge, and he's been off to Australia over the past year. He was down there touring, and now he's back, and he just got nominated, I believe, for the ECMA Awards. And I just came from that.
Two nominees, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
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 Anyway, so he's a very good blues player. He plays more the older style blues and traditional blues as well. So I can't wait to hear him. And we also have Campbell and Johnson, who are also just picked to go to Europe, I think, to a festival there. I forget the name of the festival, but that they just got nominated to go there. And they have their own brand of blues as well, but very, very good act. And then the Midtown Blues Band, I just happened to come across them on Facebook, and I contacted them, and they're very, very excited to come down here. They're a 4 or 5-piece band, and again, they play different brand of blues. I think we have a good variety of people mm-hmm. coming to play the blues.
I think people that, you know, if you spent time over the years in Halifax and any of the bars checking out the blues, the Midtown Blues Band, that's fronted by Bob Nogler.
And yes.
He's really well-known blues musician. Yes.
Most of the band members are, mm-hmm. in their own right, good musicians. They're well-known. I don't know Bob that well, but I have been in contact with his wife, Arlene, and they're just so excited to come.
Yeah.
So we're excited to have them as well.
When we go back to Campbell and Johnson for a minute, I'm trying to pitch this for people to come buy tickets and come to this event. Campbell and Johnson, they won the ECMA Best Blues Album in 2022. And last year, 2025, they had the Best Blues Release.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, you know, some fairly big people in the blues scene here. And that award John Hines won nominated two times, Maritime to Memphis. I mean, that's a lot of Maritime blues musicians. And for him to get, you know, picked to be part of that, that's a fairly big deal.
Yes, it is. And he's one of our own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really. It's just great. And, you know, I think it's important to support live music and the artists, especially in this genre, because we don't have a lot of places where they just focus on the blues. So mm-hmm. that's what we're hoping to do.
Hines has an album out now. Or CD, whatever you call it, 6 great songs. It's called Memphis Sun.
Yes.
And he's been nominated for 2 International Blues Awards for that. And he's been in the rankings for blues recording, like, for months mm-hmm. in Canada for that. And that's, like, that's a Cape Breton blues guy with an album called Memphis Sun. It's like really astounding. I was quite amazed when mm-hmm. I saw him. That was just after New Year's.
Yes.
Him playing and the and his drummer and bassist. It was really something else. Mm-hmm. So there's and that place was packed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
His bassist is Jamie Robertson. And Jamie Robertson is Stuart Robertson's son.
Okay.
Yes. And Stuart passed away earlier this year.
Yes, that's right.
He's a musician.
Yes.
Blues musician.
And he's a really good
from
one.
From here, yeah.
Yeah, very well known.
Very
okay.
Very well known, yeah.
And
I played with him years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Dan Doran, he has Ron Leadbeater coming on as his drummer.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Gig.
There you go.
So, it's going to be a great time and top-notch musicians and performers. So hopefully people are going to come to see them.
Well, it'll be guaranteed a good time.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be great. You're going to have some at the Joe Murphy thing, you had a food truck outside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're doing that same idea or something else?
No, the last one we had, it was...
Yeah, there's a food truck outside, but this time there'll be food inside.
Okay,
there'll be
three
choices on the menu.
Okay, great. That's good.
We have catering services.
Okay.
Catering service is what it is.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I think we had that during Joe Murphy, didn't we?
No, it was a food truck.
Yeah.
Outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
With delicious hot dogs.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
I was there. I bought a hot dog from that guy. They were really good.
Maybe that was the other time.
Yeah,
have food inside.
Yeah.
Because it smelled good. I didn't have any.
Yeah.
No,
I was playing. It wasn't when Joe was there. It was when Barnful of Blues was there.
Oh, that's who it was.
That was the summer.
No, that was in December.
Yeah,
I forgot about the Barnful of Blues. Yes, they played, and that was...
That was around Christmas.
Yes.
Right.
And that was the first time that we had the catering services, mm-hmm. and I think that's gone over very well.
Yes.
That's
great.
That's
good.
So... It really sounds like this, a venue, early evening, occasional blues events happening that are really focusing. The big highlight, of course, is this one, the Cape Breton Island International Blues Festival, 13th and 14th, Valentine's weekend, bring your sweetheart or sweethearts, whatever you got,
friends or lovers, whoever.
Where do you get the tickets?
Okay, so you can get the tickets on our website, which was developed by Nigel Kearns, who has been absolutely wonderful in terms of the digital and the social media stuff. You can get them at our website, which is www.cbibluesfestival.com, or you can see all the ads for this on our Facebook page,
right?
Cape Breton Island International Blues Festival, and there are going to be some posters distributed this week to the various communities,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be a barcode or a QR code.
Yeah, which will link you to the site.
No, we'll bring you to the site to get the tickets. The tickets are $55 for Friday night, plus tax, and $55 for Saturday night.
Yeah.
And the doors will open at 4:30, and the shows will begin at 6.
Yeah.
Till about 10 o'clock.
Can you get tickets at the door?
Yes, you can.
If not sold out, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
I would recommend people get off that old Cape Breton thing of buying tickets at the last minute.
I know.
Everyone does it. I'm not casting any aspersions on our audience, but I do it too.
Yeah, get them while they're hot.
This is going to be a sellout. I guarantee it. It's going to be a terrific event. And then there's the Daniels thing, too, which you can just walk into later on in the evening.
Yes, and there is going to be a charge for that for $10, but that's their normal charge.
Right.
And Joey McLeod has put together a really good host band, and Tracy McKinnon's going to be part of that, who's a singer in the area. She's got a powerhouse voice for the blues, so hopefully... people will come out and see her at least.
Okay.
That band.
Perfect. So, Joanne, Kathy, want to thank you and hope our listeners will go to the website or Facebook, Cape Breton Island International Blues Festival. There's lots of stuff on their website too from all the acts performing, and there's links to their websites and their YouTube videos and everything. You want to check out what Gemini Dragon's all about, or Dan Dorian, or Campbell and Johnson, whatever. It's all there, and then you can see. And then I encourage people, get out there and break the February blues and head down to the Capri Club for a wonderful early evening. Thank you, ladies.
Heart Full of Blues.
Heart Full of Blues, we're calling it.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Glace Bay man says he won't allow U.S. President Donald Trump to tarnish his late son's legacy, who was killed in action in Afghanistan about 16 years ago. Sergeant Jimmy McNeil was killed by a roadside bomb in 2010 during his fourth tour of duty with the Canadian Armed Forces. His father, Jimmy McNeil Sr., says the loss is difficult to describe, but he found the words when Trump recently downplayed NATO's role in the conflict.
He's an idiot, eh? I don't even understand why people vote him in. He don't care about us at all. That's for sure. Like people are just sacrificing their lives, say, for him, and we're not getting nowhere. The way things are, there's nothing we can do. But I mean, to tell you, like, people are just so upset with him. It's unreal.
He says his son was courageous on the battlefield and kind to civilians.
Oh, he cared about everybody. Even when he was over Afghanistan, there's a little girl there, club feet and club hands. She wouldn't talk to nobody, and Jimmy started playing with her, and she had her arms and legs wrapped around Jimmy's leg, eh?
McNeil visits his son's grave several times a week, and his unique memorial of having the late soldier's portrait on his car garners much interest from people who see it out in the community. McNeil was among 158 Canadian soldiers killed in Afghanistan after the U.S. called for help. If you're looking for something a little bit more on the adult side to spice things up on a chilly, wintry Valentine's Day, you might want to check out the Bonded Hearts Bazaar. Dialogue's Cora Perrigo has this report.
My name is Katie Hodder, and we're here today to talk about the Naughty Night Market and our upcoming third annual Bonded Hearts Bazaar, which is on February 7th at the Port, and it's a welcoming environment to anyone over 19.
So kind of what does the bazaar look like? I know there's performances.
So every Naughty Night Market, we have a little bit of a theme, but every single one of them is pretty much designed the same. We offer a safe space for different vendors and artisans who mostly center their work on, let's say, more adult kind of themes. And so we have this great space that's still in the public, but kind of separate from the public. It's free admission, but you have to be 19 or older. We have shows, like some kind of entertainment going on every 20 to 30 minutes on stage. And it's burlesque, and we have drag performances. Plus, we have some spicy fashion shows now added to the roster. We like to give them the opportunity to show that on the stage as well. The whole thing is a show. Case of what local art is like when you get to see it after dark.
What would you say kind of is the value of having these spaces, especially in a community like Cape Breton?
So I find, like, and this is the thing, I find most people think that Cape Breton is a little bit more older, a little more mature, a little bit more clutch your pearls. And that's not the case, because these events bring out everyone from the ages of, like, say, 19 right up to 80. I've seen all ages, all body types, all sexualities, and it's just a great safe space for all of these like minds to come together and just enjoy a fun adult-only event. There's a lot of people think the first time coming in a little nervous, but it's not. It's literally just a regular fun event market with entertainment, with just a little bit more spice. We're not going to shock you. We're not there for shock and awe. We're there to just have fun, let your hair down, and just enjoy a giggle or two and, you know, shopping and perusing some spicy different vendors. So I just think it's important to bring stuff like that to Cape Breton, because even though people consider us a small community, Cape Breton is like CBRM itself is the second largest municipality in Nova Scotia. So why shouldn't we have it?
What was kind of you said it was the third year. What was kind of the inspiration behind starting it?
So it's so funny because we're an entirely nonprofit. Like, we're all just volunteers that do this. And originally what happened was about 4 years ago, we had I was meeting other market people, like different vendors, different people in like the industry, or just other regular entrepreneurs in Cape Breton. And we all have the same thing. Like, there's just not enough stuff here for adult only. It's great that we have all these beautiful programs and events for families, but there's just not enough for adults. And so we talked about it, and then we started talking to other vendors and stuff. And they're like, we realize there are vendors that are holding back half of their inventory because they don't feel like they have the appropriate place to show it and sell it. And we thought, well, let's just do something about that. And so we combined all of the wants and the needs, and we put it together, and we created the Naughty Night Market, which allows us to do like one to maybe two events a year where we can put together these safe spaces for these vendors to sell those products they normally cannot sell at regular markets. And also to give the community something really fun to do because it's free admission.
Have you come up against kind of any misconceptions when you've advertised it or you've talked about it?
You know what? The first year we thought we were going to get pushback. We thought someone was going to complain. And you know what? They embraced us because, like I said, we're not a shock and awe. We do everything by the book when it comes to like the burlesque performances. Everything is because the burlesque performer, Honey DeMille, is the one that is usually our headliner. She's the one that helped us with the burlesque community. She knows all the ins and outs, how to keep it legal, how to keep it PG for certain things. We always put up a partition privacy wall. So when you come into the space, even though Flavor is outside, like there's a restaurant right outside, you don't see anything inside. You see a kind of an entryway with a pipe and drape. It covers everything. Because if you're not participating, a willing participant to come into this, then you shouldn't have to see that. So we've really kept it well kind of maintained so that those who want to come in and enjoy the night can, and those who don't, they don't have to worry about it. And we really pride ourselves on the fact that we've made it such a comfortable and safe environment for those in or out that we haven't had any complaints. So it's been great.
How have you seen it change year to year? What differences?
So much. So we started off with just winging it, right? So now we're in our third year of the Vaunted Hearts Bazaar, which is our big Valentine's Day one. And I tell you, just having more and we have more vendors that show up. We actually sold out of tables because we only have a certain amount of tables. We have so many new faces and we have just so much talent on the stage, and we've sold out of all our tables already. So we have no more spaces for vendors now. We have not only one, but three burlesque dancers. So we have newer burlesque dancers that are coming on. They get to do a debut at each of the shows. So now we have one main headliner and two new ones coming in. So it's four burlesque shows we're going to be offering that night. So it's four numbers and then possibly four drag shows. And we believe we're going to be possibly seeing a drag king this year. So it's just, things have really ramped up. We've gotten more people involved. We have more people excited to join us. It's just gotten better. Like, we just keep, anytime we see something that's wrong, we just keep working out the kinks. But yeah, it's just getting better and better as we go.
It's interesting. I, a few of the interviews I do about events, not only kind of is this Valentine's Day kind of themed and up with that, but it's also, you know, what would you say, I guess, about the importance of having these events, having things for people to come out to when it's so cold, it's so dark, it's so...
Yeah, it's actually really funny because the very first one happened right after Snowmageddon. Like, everybody was snowed in for a solid, like, 7 to 8 days. And I think we were one of the only events popping off that weekend once everybody got dug out. So it was insane. We saw almost 800 people come through the door that night. It's important to have fun things like this because it is hard, because I know how it feels. You come home from work, you just want to, like, relax. You don't want to go out anywhere. But this kind of event is just something different to shake it up, you know, light a little fire in the winter and just, I don't know, enjoy yourself. Get out, because it's no obligation. There's no tickets. If you want to go, you can go. If you don't, you don't. It's free admission. And I think that not putting that kind of demand on people really just kind of alleviates that stress. And so if they feel on a whim that night, you know what, let's get these pajamas off and throw on some clothes and just head on down there and check it out. You don't have to stay long. You can just stay for a half an hour, peruse, grab a drink from the bar and watch a show and then go home. And I think it's important to have those types of events in the wintertime because winter is, Cape Breton winter especially, is moodier than a pregnant woman. And we never know what the weather's going to be like. And so you don't know if you're going to be in the mood that night. So you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about wasting ticket sale on it. You can just show up or don't show up. It's up to you. You can hear about it from your friends and then get FOMO and come next year. But it is important to have some things in the wintertime.
So what, I guess, procedures are there in place to ensure that kind of everybody who is in that space is supposed to be in that space?
Yes. So we have lots of security. So we have 2 security guards when you first come in. So those security guards will be checking if you look like you're under 30, you'll be checked for ID. And then we also have like just constant people on the ground. Like, we have lots of volunteers. So like, if there's anything going on, like and we always tell all of our vendors and we always announce it to our guests. We like to tell people, like, please be respectful of everybody's space. Please be respectful of, you know, people's consent. Cause some people do kind of tend, like, you know, when people are drinking, we always like to remind them, like, stay in your own lane and stay in your own space unless you're invited. Also, just please don't leave the venue if you're wearing, because we encourage people to wear something that makes them feel good. But if you are leaving the space and going through the restaurant to get to the bathroom, we do appreciate if you cover back up with your jacket, because again, those people out there are not participants in our event. Also, we just stick with all of the rules when it comes to Atlantic Burlesque. We always make sure that we have the right stage and we have the right coverings and stuff. And again, that privacy window or privacy screen that prevents people from outside looking in. So we always make sure that everybody knows if you need anything, you can hunt one of us down. We try to make it so that we're very noticeable. And if you have any questions or concerns, you can come right to one of us and we will take care of it immediately. And honestly, in the 3 years, we've never had an issue, so it's been great.
That's all for Dialogue this week. If you have an idea for an interview on the program, send us an email to news@coastalradio.ca. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.